Nedarim Perek Beis, Mishnah Beis, 2-2. And the first part of this Mishnah will contrast three attempts at making a neder, which are ineffective, with three attempts which are essentially identical, but using a shvua instead of a neder expression, which are yes effective in making one bound to his shvua, to his oath. So we'll call those cases 1a, 1b, 1c are the attempts at making a neder, whereas 2a, 2b, 2c are almost identical expressions, but using a shvua instead, which are yes effective. Okay, so the first case of the Mishnah is 1a, is korban lo ochalach, which means something like sacrifice, as shall I eat of yours. So it sounds like what a person's trying to do here is to make a shvua, to swear by the korban, by a korban, that he won't eat his friend's food. Now, you can't take a shvua using the expression korban, that's not effective. The shvua has to be tied back to expression of shvua itself or Hashem, so therefore it's not going to be binding. What's interesting is that we had said back in Mishnah 1:3 of the previous parak that if a person says lo chulin lo ochalach, that would be binding. And of course, lo chulin lo ochalach, which means that which I don't eat of yours shall not be chulin, which implies that which I will eat of yours shall yes be not chulin, meaning shall yes be korban. So it sounds like those are very similar expressions, meaning if. And to the contrary, korban lo ochalach sounds even more, I don't know, sounds potentially closer than lo ochul lo ochalach, lo chulin lo ochalach, excuse me. But the reason why is there's no way to say lo chulin is, lo chulin can't be understood to be referring to a shvua. One wouldn't take an oath, one can swear, not by korban. That makes no sense. And therefore, that would be binding. Whereas if a prince says, korban lo ochalach, that sounds like a shvua, and therefore, it is not going to be binding. Okay, that's case 1a. In contrast, you look at case 2a, it says, shvua lo ochalach. If one said, shvua lo ochalach, that would be binding because it's taking a shvua. He's swearing that he will not eat his friend's food. Case 1b says, korban sheochalach. Now, that also is not effective to be bound by the neder. Now, that's very strange, because if you remember Mishnah 1:4 of the previous parak said, korban she'ochalach is indeed binding as a neder, as is ha-korban she'ochalach. So, therefore, it makes no sense that our Mishnah here says korban she'ochalach is not binding, and therefore, the Gemara says we actually have to change the gears, to change the words of our Mishnah, to read ha-korban she'ochalach, which means something like this korban, that I eat of yours, and that now we've now turned it to sound like you're sort of swearing again in the name of the korban of an offering, which is not effective. Okay, so we have to change the girsa. In contrast, while korban or ha-korban she'ochalach is not effective because it sounds like a shvua when you say ha-korban, that's case 1b. Case 2b, if you will, where it says shvua she'ochalach, I swear that I will eat of yours, that is going to be binding. Let's explain more in a minute. Okay? The third 1c is if a person says, lo korban, lo ochalach, which I will not translate literally, but I'll explain. It's like a person saying, that of yours which I do not eat shall not be like a korban to me. The implication might be, therefore, that of yours of which I do eat shall be like a korban to me, which sounds like an effective neder. However, the reason why one cannot draw that inference, contrapositive, the inference of saying what I just said, is because the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds the principle is mechla lav I ata shomeya hein. From a negative sentence, a negative principle, one may not infer a positive statement. So while it's true that one could arguably say, if my sentence is, I'm reading the words, just repeating myself, if the sentence was lo korban, lo ochalach, that which I don't eat of yours is not like korban. One could infer that which I do eat of yours is like korban. Reb Meir says, no, one may not. The rule is that one cannot make such an inference. And since the author of our Mishnah is Reb Meir, so he holds, therefore, that such a neder is not binding. Of course, there are other shittos, not like Reb Meir, hold that mechlal lav Atasho Meyahain, one may make such an inference, but that's like our Mishnah. I'm just paving the way to an obvious kash in a moment. Reb Meir holds that rule of Michlalav I Atasho Meyahain only applies where there's some inyan of mamonos involved, where some financial consideration. And in the context of a neder, there's always a financial consideration, because if I'm forbidding your food to me, that means I have to pay for my food from somewhere else. So therefore, there's a financial consideration, because remember, the neder goes on the object. If object becomes prohibited to me, so the prohibition means that I'm now, you know, restricted some way financially, that has a cost. Whereas in the case of a shvua, as we'll see shortly, it's only on the person. There's only an issue of iser v'heter, not of mamonos. It's just may or may not I do something. And therefore, even Rav Meir would hold that Mechla lav atosho meyahein. You may make such an inference. Okay, we'll see that shortly. Okay, so those are the first three cases of our Mishnah. And all through those cases, the Mishnah says mutar, even though one sounds like he is trying to forbid something, the thing remains permitted. In contrast, here now we have 2a, 2b, 2c again. If a person says shvua lo ochalach, I swear that I shall not eat of yours. So that's like, that's what the implication is, although the words just means oath, not eat yours, which is of course not a full sentence and not a comprehensive, coherent sentence necessarily. Nevertheless, we're saying that is asur, that is binding, and one may not eat. Because we're interpreting it to mean like shvua shetei alai, I should be bound by an oath, shlo ochal mishlcha, that I will not eat your stuff. And that of course would be like then a binding Torah oath, a Torah binding shvua. And we're using here like yados, we're saying although the thought wasn't complete, the meaning is clear, and therefore he would be bound. Okay. Now, just worth noting separately is that when a person says shvua lo ochalach, he certainly is not mentioning the Shem Hashem, right? Now, there's a question in the Rishonim if one has to say shvua b'Hashem, I swear by God that I will not eat your food, if that's the required formula for a binding shvua. Now, essentially, all the Rishonim agree that if one makes a shvua without employing the Shem Hashem, without using God's name, he's bound by it. But the Rambam holds, if the name of Hashem is not implicated in the shvua, one didn't say shvua b'Hashem, I swear by God, so then if he actually transgresses what he said and does what he said he wouldn't do, or doesn't do what he said he would do for that matter. So then, according to the Rambam, if there's no Shem Hashem employed, there will be no obligation for the violation of the Shvua, which normally is, if one violates a Shvua, and let's say uses Shem Hashem, everyone agrees, so then if he does it b'shogeg, inadvertently, so kind of like Hilchos Shabbos, I said I swear to Hashem I will not eat your food, if then I forget about my oath and I eat your food, or I eat food not realizing it's your food, so then I would have to bring a korban. The korban is called the olav yored, a variable offering. It's like a sin offering, but depending on the wealth of the person, depends on exactly what he brings. And if one does it bemazed, he knows what he's doing and he does it anyways, eats the food he's not allowed to eat, then he would incur malchus lashes. So the Rambam holds, if you don't say Shem Hashem, there's no malchus, no korban, whereas others like the Ran hold, yes, there is malchus and the korban, even if you just say shvu without the Shem Hashem. Okay, case 2b, if a person says shvua sheochalach, I swear that I will eat your stuff. Now, what's this talking about over here? Usually it sounds like he's saying, I won't eat. So the case here is understood from the context of the discussion that's happening in real life. Meaning, so it's something like this is happening. If a person, you know, says to his friend, you know, here, eat my soup. And he says, I'm not eating your soup. And he says, no, come on, eat the soup. He says, I'm not eating your soup. He says, come on, eat the soup. The guy says, shvua sheochalach, like I swear, if I eat your soup, like something like that. It's hard to translate exactly. The point is, he's taking a shvua about eating the soup, but it's clear from the context he's swearing he's not going to eat the soup. Not that he is going to eat the soup. Then he'd be bound because of the context. And similarly, of course, if a person would say shvua sheochalach, these very same words, in context, it could mean he's swearing to yes, eat the soup. Like, for example, if I say eat the soup, and you say, okay, I'm eating it. I will right now. And they say, no, eat it now. You say, yeah, I'm going to eat it right now. I say, eat it right now. You say, I swear I'm going to eat it. So then by saying, I swear I'm going to eat it, again, that would be bound that you now have to eat it. And if you fail to eat it, then you've violated the law of not doing what you said you're going to do. Okay. The third case, 2C we'll call it, is lo shvua lo ochalach. I'm not bound by an oath to not eat. I'm not bound by an oath regarding what I don't eat of yours. which therefore the implication would be, I am bound by an oath against that which I do eat of yours. So again, we're now drawing an inference based on this negative to the positive, so it's like a contra positive. Although we said in 1c, if one says lo korban lo ochalach, that's not binding. If one says lo shvua lo ochalach, that is binding, because here we do apply the principle of michlal lav atoshameyahain. But the fact one said, I'm not under oath regarding what I don't eat of yours, we will derive what the intention is, that which I do eat of yours, I am under oath. And although we said that the Tana of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir holds that Mechlal Lav Iyatashamehan, you can't make such an inference. Again, that's only where it comes to some sort of mamonus involved, some sort of financial consideration. And here we're talking about a Shvua. A Shvua is simply an oath to Isser Vehetzer on the person. And therefore, even Rabbi Meir holds Mechlal Lav Atashamehan, you can't make the inference. So if the person takes a Shvua and says that Lo Shvua Lo Ochalach, I'm not bound by Shvua about that which I don't eat of yours, so then I am bound with a shvua regarding that which I do eat of yours. So the Mishnah says, Asr. In all three of those cases, 2a, 2b, 2c, one is bound, and if one no longer can eat the food or whatever he forswore. Period. Now, the next line of the Mishnah says, Zechomer b'shvuas mibinadarim. This is a stricture that applies to shvuas that doesn't apply to nadarim. Now, you might have thought that that's simply saying, you see three examples where neder doesn't work and three examples where shvua does work. The problem is, the expression of chomer implies that it does work, but to a greater degree by shvuas. Whereas here we're saying it doesn't work at all. So therefore, chomer is not really the right language, but a choice of word. And therefore, the Gemara understands that this is actually referring to the previous Mishnah, 1-3. Excuse me, 2-1. And in Mishnah 2-1, the previous Mishnah, we said that if a person takes a neder against an action like konam she'eni yashen, or konam she'eni medaber, or konam she'eni mahalach, one says that sleeping or speaking or walking is forbidden to him like a korban, we said that's binding only rabbinically, because eating, sleeping, talking is a davar she'en bo mamish, it hasn't got a substance, not a physical thing, and therefore midoraisa neder can't devolve upon it, but midorabanan we say it could. So the point there is that shvuas are more chamor, more strict than nedarim, in as much as they can be chal midoraisa and a davar she'en bo mamish, a non-physical thing, whereas nedarim only are binding rabbinically on a non-physical thing. Okay, and if you'll ask, well, why did the Mishnah say it here instead of before? The answer is, every Mishnah really is like, the whole parak is like one block of text, if you will, text, so to speak, one contiguous piece that can be referred to. So even though this Mishnah is referring to the previous Mishnah, that's not uncommon at all. And in fact, the way the Mishnah is broken up, the parak of Mishnah is broken up, varies between our Mishnah and the Bavli in a number of places. In fact, the Bavli itself breaks up this Mishnah we're talking about here into a couple of pieces, and the previous Mishnah into three pieces. And the Yerushalmi also breaks up the Mishnahs differently. So the point is, Zechomer b'shvuas m'benedarim is referring to the previous Mishnah's case about the Dorais and Durban on taking shvuas on the Barm Shein B'mamash and more strict. Now, we're going to, in contrast, we'll say, Vechomer b'nedarim m'b'shvuas. There are ways in which, well, here's a way in which nedarim are more strict than a shvua. How is that, Ketzad? Because if a person says, Omer, konam sukkah sh'ani osa, a person says, the sukkah that I shall make shall be forbidden to me like a korban, or a lulav shani unnotel, the lulav that I take to shake on sukkahs should be forbidden to me like a korban, or tefillin shani maniach, the tefillin which I put on myself shall be forbidden to me like a korban. In all those cases, benedarim asur, if one makes a neder as such, he's bound and he cannot shake such a lulav or wear such tefillin, etc. Now, the reason why is because the neder goes on the object. So one essentially is making the object forbidden, which would mean that if one were to now wear these tefillin or shake this lulav, which is forbidden to him, so then he would be like a mitzvah haba'a avera. He's simultaneously doing the avera of lo yachal devaro, of profaning his word, and the mitzvah would be mitzvah of shaking lulav or wearing tefillin, etc. Now, it's kind of analogous to, let's say, if you have matzah to eat on Seder night, so of course there's a mitzvah asa to eat matzah, but the problem is, let's say for example, the matzah is tevel, it hasn't had its proper hafashah taken from it, so it's asher eat, it's like not kosher. So the point is, even though you only have matzah to eat, then it's not chametz, it's kosher as matzah, but it's not kosher to eat for a different reason, so you can't eat it. So even though you have matzah in front of you, you can't eat that matzah, and you can't, you know, you can't ignore the fact that it's usher, so you won't be able to fulfill your mitzvah of achilas matzah. If you'll ask, wait a second, the general rule is that mitzvahs ase doche lo sase, if you have a conflicting mitzvahs, one says you have to do something, one says you may not do something. So the general rule is that the ase doche lo sase, that the obligation to do trumps the obligation not to do. While that is true, it's not applicable over here because the mitzvah of fulfilling your neder is actually a twofold mitzvah. It has both the lav, the prohibition of lo yachal devaro, but also as the mitzvahs ase, the positive mitzvah, second of the 613, kechol hayotz mipiv yase, you have to do whatever you say. So since you have both an ase and a lo sase when it comes to the darm, a simple mitzvah ase like tefillin or lulav would not override that. Okay, so therefore you see nedarim are binding, even if they're against a mitzvah. And a couple other questions might just loose ends here. If you ask, there's an inconsistency here, why would it say, when it talks about the lulav, it says lulav shani notel, because there's a mitzvah of natilas lulav, and tefillin shani maniach, because there's a mitzvah of maniach, of hanachas tefillin. Why does it say sukkah shanin oseh? There's not a mitzvah to make a sukkah. There's a mitzvah to yeshiva sukkah, to dwell in the sukkah. So why did it say oseh in inconsistent language? So one answer is that the pasuk says chag hasukos ta'aseh lecha shivas yamim. So the verse itself, when it refers to dwelling in the sukkah, refers to it as ta'aseh, like oseh, making, and therefore it uses that kind of language. A separate question one might ask is, normally, the prohibition that one takes the nether is something that's like forbidden to get benefit from, like a korban. And there's a rule we say, which is mitzvos lav lehenos nitnu. Mitzvos weren't given for you to get benefit from. So when you're putting on your tefillin, it's not for the joy of putting on tefillin. And when you're shaking lulav, it's not for the joy of putting on of shaking a lulav. It's for doing the mitzvah. And there's no hana necessarily at all. And therefore, even if hana is forbidden, it should be permitted to shake a lulav from which you're forbidden hana from. So there are a few different answers given here, but the simplest one, I think, is to say that when he took this neder, he made it clear. He was forswearing through a neder the actual shaking of lulav or the wearing of tefillin, etc. And therefore, although it's not a hana issue per se, he took a vow not to shake the lulav, wear the tefillin, sit in the sukkah, and therefore he can't. Okay, in contrast, while those are effective because the nedarim can work on objects, b'shvuos mutar. Says the Mishnah, if you took a shvua against dwelling in a sukkah or shaking a lulav or wearing tefillin, you would still be allowed to do those things. She'ein nishba'in la'avor ala mitzvos. There's no such thing as taking a shvua against doing a mitzvah. The shvua goes on the person, and the person already is bound by a previous shvua that he was made back at Har Sinai, that he was going to dwell in a sukkah, shake a lulav, wear tefillin, and therefore you can't take a shvua against that because you're already bound to, yes, do it. Therefore, it's not binding. And that's example where, so this is example where nedarim are more chamor than shvuos. Now, if you'll ask the question, wait a second. A few moments ago, I was busy saying how chomer implies that it's a difference of degree, not a difference of kind. And here we're saying the shvuah is not binding, so therefore it should be the same issue. How could you say that the neder is more chomer than the shvuah when neder is binding where the shvuah isn't binding? There's no rabbinic binding either. So what's going on? So, an answer is that when it comes to shvua, if you take a shvua against which the Torah said you're going to do, while it's certainly true that your shvuas bitui, like your commitment, is not binding, which you said you're not bound to do, you still have to shake your lulav, etc. But one would then be on the hook for a shvuas shav, taking a oath in vain, which is a separate crime all to itself. And therefore, while it's more chamur, the neder and the shvua, because while the neder is binding, the shvua isn't, you're still on the hook for a shvua shav, an oath in vain.